Bob Powers and Robert Lighton are the co-authors of The Life and Times of Dave the Rave Stallworth. Dave Stallworth played for Wichita State from 1961 to 65. He earned consensus All-American honors in 64 and 65. The New York Knicks picked him third in the 1965 draft, and he won an NBA title in 1970 with the Knicks. He is regarded as the greatest Shocker and the player most responsible for turning the program into a passion for fans and lifting it to the top levels of college basketball. Bob Powers was a teammate of Stallworth's with the Shockers and a member of the 1965 Final Four team. Lytton grew up in McPherson and Wichita as a Shocker fan, watching those great teams of the early 1960s. All royalties from the book will be donated to the WSU Foundation for the David Stallworth Memorial Scholarship. So let's start. Let's do the business first. How do people buy this book?
So I'll answer that. They can buy it on Amazon.com, and they can either get it, I think, in Kindle form or get an actual book.
Thank you, Robert. All right. Tell us about this book. Why did it need to be written?
Well, it's been in my gut for 50 years, and I wanted to put something out for the public to enjoy as much as we enjoyed those days.
Mr. Lighton, tell us your perspective on that. Why did this book need to be written? Had to be a labor of love for both of you.
It certainly is a labor of love because we're not making a penny off of it. All the money is going to the scholarship, and that actually is one of the reasons to have it written, so that we can donate the proceeds to the scholarship, call more attention to the scholarship fund, increase the amount that's in the fund so that there will be more students who will be able to benefit from the legacy that Dave gave all of us. And also from my perspective as a fan, he was one of my first heroes when I was a teenager. And the connection between Bob Powers and I was established by my having attended the incredible, probably the greatest Shocker game in history, where Cincinnati was our opponent. Shockers beat them, upset them. They were then ranked number one. This was in February of 1963. And it's one of the few games I ever saw in person, and I was on the floor, and I will never forget the game the rest of my life. And maybe we'll talk later about how that game led to a connection between the two Bobs and writing the book.
So Shocker basketball has had a lot of boom periods. The 60s is one that we will talk about today. We're also in another boom period. Over the last 20, 25 years, it's been enormously popular. So people are going to, listening to this podcast, hopefully will be familiar with Trey Murray and Ron Baker and Fred VanVleet and that generation. What's the appeal to the younger Shocker fan, to someone who maybe came on board in 2006 or 2016? Why should they read this book? What will they get out of it? Mr. Powers, I'll give you first cut at that.
Well, I'd rather hear what Bob has to say.
So I think a lot of young fans will learn why Wichita State became a national power and why it was that the Fred VanVleet and the Ron Bakers, Trey Murray, and not just them, the X-Man, Antoine Carr, Cliff Levingston, all the great Shockers that came. They came because Wichita State was a household name in basketball. And the person most responsible for making that happen was Dave Stallworth. And so I think any fan that's interested in the history of the Shockers and wants to know how it was that Wichita State became what it is has to read this book.
Hi, this is Rick Miuma, president of Wichita State University. Check out the latest episode of the Forward Together podcast. Each episode, I sit down with different guests from Shocker Nation to celebrate the vision and mission of Wichita State University. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
So Mr. Powers, you've got younger children, you've got grandchildren. I'm sure they will read this book. What are you hoping they will get out of it?
Well, at least they'll know the old man had a little bit of brains in his head. I wrote the book really for the public in Wichita. I believe, as I did when we started the statue, that there are more people in Wichita that love Dave Stallworth, and they are there and they are giving. They put the statue up in almost less than a year. And this book, I believe, as soon as it can get the, we can get the word out, I believe this book is going to sell like crazy, because it is a day-to-day description of Dave Stallworth for a very short period of time, but it was well-researched. And we feel, Bob and I feel very good about the time we put into figuring all this stuff out.
I'm glad you mentioned the statue, because during the process of fundraising and designing and organizing, both of you were really involved with getting that put outside the arena. You were clear that it wasn't just Dave's appeal wasn't just about his basketball skills. He was he returned to Wichita, he worked in Wichita, lived in Wichita, raised a family in Wichita. Describe his importance aside from his basketball skills.
So one of the things that struck me, because I didn't really know him. I got to meet him at the 50th anniversary party, which is how I met Bob, because I saw an item in the Eagle. In fact, Paul, you may have written the piece, actually. But in the course of researching it, I got to know Dave's wife, Gloria, who it turns out was in my high school class, but didn't realize it. Her maiden name was Gloria Jones.
At Wichita Southeast,
right?
At Wichita Southeast?
Yeah, Southeast, yeah. And there are a lot of coincidences in the book. When people read it, it turns out that the captain of the team was Dave Leach. He was the basketball coach at Southeast, and I was a basketball manager for Dave Leach. And we got to actually reunite 50 years later through a second dinner that Bob Powers organized. But to get to the point, back to your point about the thing about Dave, the thing that I learned most about Dave is that despite his basketball, well, there are two things. One is he came back, and we'll talk about this maybe, from what was then thought to be a heart attack in his second year in the NBA. And we describe it as, not in our words, but it was described as one of the greatest comebacks in sports history. I mean, it just gives you goosebumps just reading about when the readers read about exactly what happened and then see what happened. It just has to give you goosebumps. But the second thing is, aside from his incredible tenacity and fortitude, is that despite his greatness, et cetera, he was a very humble guy. You know, he was very placid, he took life in stride. He never was bitter about the fact that his career was cut short by his heart attack or near heart attack. I mean, he's a man who we can all look up to as saying, you know, I mean, we all have hurdles in life and all obstacles in life. Dave had some big obstacles, and he overcame them, and he never expressed any bitterness to anybody. And that's a lesson that all of us can learn.
So, Mr. Powers, your view of Dave away from basketball, what made him such an important figure?
Well, he's such a kind and gentle human being. And like my friend Melvin Reed and I have discussed many times, and Melvin has said, Dave has what he calls an even personality. Neither one of us have ever seen him get upset. And not on the floor, not on the street. And one of the things that I think about Dave is why he chose Wichita for his final home. You know, that guy traveled all over the world. He could have lived anywhere he wanted to, especially in the United States. And there were towns where he was a huge hero. But he chose Wichita. He chose Wichita not because of Wichita, but because of how he felt in Wichita. He felt welcome. He felt like he could get something done here in Wichita, make a living. And that gave he and Gloria an opportunity to meet out at Boeing and spend the next, 25, 36 years together.
Yeah.
So he was just a kind man.
But he had a fun side to him. I mean, we talk about in the book, there's a side of Dave Stauber that people did not see. And maybe even Bob Powers didn't see when he was a teammate. But we found out by talking to some of his other teammates that he had a hijinks side of his personality. He was not just a basketball player. He was a regular guy. And also the other thing that really jumped out from our research, he was the ultimate team basketball player. It was drilled into him when he was a high school player from Dallas, South Dallas. His coach then drilled in team first mentality, and he had a team first mentality throughout his entire career. Despite his ability to go off on any night, he could score 30 or 40 points if he wanted to, but he played as a team player.
You know, Mr. Powers, in the book, you reference having a great seat to watch Dave Stallworth. Describe his basketball skills.
Well, I've said in a few places that you didn't want to get Dave upset out on the floor. Because if you personally got his attention, he would just clean your clock. He could do anything he wanted with the basketball. And one of the things that I remember from one of our reunions, I remember Dave Leach at the end, he was given the opportunity to say some things about our team. And one of the things he said about Dave, which was verified by Coach Henson, the way he treated his team in high school, Dave Leach said, if you needed help with the man you were guarding, Dave was there. If Dave had a shot, a clean shot, but you had a better shot, you would get the ball. So Dave Leach said that, and you know, I didn't pay much attention to it until we started doing some research down at his high school, in Madison High School in Dallas, Texas. He was taught not to be a star. His coach wouldn't let him. If he started getting close to 20 points, his coach would bench him. It's like Wilbur Williams said, who was the point guard with Dave on the 1960 Madison championship team. Wilbur said, we were treated like a team in high school. Coach Henson wouldn't let any of us outscore or outdo anything. We were a team. We dressed like a team. We acted like a team. And he treated us like a team. And Dave, that was drilled into those kids. And Dave carried that throughout his professional career. I never saw anything like it. He just was, like Melvin said, his temperament was even, and it never changed.
So in Dave's time, Shocker basketball hit another level, getting to the NCAA tournament, winning Missouri Valley Conference championships, attendance basically doubled. What was it like seeing Shocker basketball go from something that was important in the community? Certainly Ralph Miller and Cleo Littleton and that group in the 50s elevated it. But boy, those groups in the early 60s just really made it an even bigger deal. What was it like being a part of that and watching Shocker basketball turn into a real fervor around town?
Well, I remember my first view of the stadium. Lanny took me in to the round, and we stood there in the round and looked out at the court. And I couldn't believe how big that court was. I said, Coach, I don't know if I can run that floor. He said, Bob, your high school gym is the exact same size as this court. And I said, well, it does not look like it, Coach, and I'm not sure about all this. And so we went on and got down the road, and it all came together.
One of the interesting things about the history that we uncovered, we went back and read Ralph Miller's biography. We went to a lot of sources, but one of the interesting stories that's in Miller's biography is when they built Henry Levitt Arena, which was the original name before it became Koch Arena from the renovations that Charles Koch contributed. When it was Henry Levitt Arena, there was a lot of criticism or a lot of fear that when they were building a 10,000 plus arena, that they wouldn't be able to fill it because the Shockers were not drawn, you know, even in the Forum, they were not always full. And, at the time, Miller said that they could have expanded the Levitt Arena to, you know, something like 17 or 18,000. They could have put an extra tier on it. And it wouldn't have cost all that much. I think the arena originally cost like $1.5 million. And for an extra couple hundred thousand, they could have put, you know, another 7 or 8,000 people. And in retrospect, they should have, because they would have easily filled it up in the Stallworth era. And frankly, you know, if you build an 18,000 person stadium, it's conceivable that Shocker history would have been different in the years after Stallworth. It's conceivable they would have attracted even bigger name players. We'll never know. But I think it's sort of an interesting story that that Miller, you know, was criticized. And yet during those years, it became the house that they built. And that was sort of a phrase that everybody knew. And just as an individual, you know, as a kid growing up, my parents were not into sports. So I rarely ever got a ticket to sports. But I will tell you, getting a Shocker ticket was the hottest thing in town. All right. I mean, everyone wanted to go to Shocker game.
So to continue the history lesson, before the on-campus arena, the on-campus field house, Wichita State played most of its games or many of its games downtown at the Forum. They also played some at Henrion. My understanding is they probably about more than doubled it when they moved to the on-campus arena. What were the atmosphere, the circumstances that those early 60s teams, and there are a lot of great names, Gene Wiley, Stallworth, Ernie Moore, Nate Bowman. What was it about those teams and that time in college basketball that helped the Shockers mushroom into such a fan passion?
Well, I think Ralph Miller was the driving force in all of that. He was a real taskmaster. And as you'll hear from a number of players in the book, he made us all toe the line. So I attribute all that started when Ralph took over as the head coach. And I didn't like him leaving, but he had to go. And he had a choice to make, and he made it. And so we were left with Dave and Nate, and we got as far as we could go based on the time they had left to play.
Ralph Miller left for the University of Iowa after the 1964 season, just to provide the background. So, Mr. Powers, you talked about Dave as a on-court teammate, unselfish, and he indeed, he led the Shockers in assists one of his seasons, so great scorer, great passer. Describe him as a teammate, maybe off the court. What was he like in the locker room, on the trips around the Missouri Valley Conference and around the nation?
Okay, so that's a very good question, and I just put a CD out of the conversation between Melvin Reed and I. It's about 50 minutes, and I've got plenty of them, and I'm passing a bunch out to the foundation and to the basketball office. Are you in the basketball office, Paul?
I'm in the arena, but not the basketball office, yes.
So I'll make sure that you get one. But anyway, my point, Melvin and I talked about the fact that no one saw Dave anywhere except in practice and at the games. We can't... It didn't matter who you were. He was a very private individual. We didn't see him anywhere except on the floor. And that's about all I can say about that. We don't know anybody that can tell us anything about his private life.
Mr. Lighton, growing up as a Shocker fan, describe watching Stallworth as a youngster. I'm imagining that, you know, when you're at that age, boy, your sports heroes are very important to you.
So I grew up with two sports heroes, Bill Russell and Dave Stoller. I mean, I got introduced to basketball because, you know, in the late 50s, all you could watch were the Celtics and the Hawks. And I became a, you know, big advocate or big fan of Bill Russell. And then when Stallworth got to Wichita, I mean, you know, there weren't that many Shocker games were on TV, so I had to listen by radio. But the few games I saw him on TV, it was just, you know, I mean, you could just shake your head watching it. And then, as I said, seeing him in person for that game, I will never forget in my life. That 46-point game where they beat Cincinnati. I mean, it's just hard to describe. He was as close to, I mean, in his peak years, he was as close to Dr. J as, you know, as anybody. But he had Dr. J's, not only his, you know, incredible shot-making ability, but Dave could shoot outside. So in a three-point world, Dave's scoring average, which was something like 24 points a game, would have been over 30 today. Because he could hit it from anywhere. Totally versatile player. And the more amazing thing, and we talk about it in the book and we do a blow by blow. When he got to the NBA, his most famous game was the fifth game of the 1970 series against the Knicks. And he personally guarded Wilt Chamberlain in the last quarter, and was responsible for the Knicks getting to the seventh game, this famous Willis Reed game where Willis Reed was limping out on the court. The Knicks would have never had a seventh game. They would have never had a championship if it hadn't been for Stallworth personally defeating Chamberlain. And we describe how that happened. It's one of the more amazing things. He gave up 6 inches to Chamberlain, and yet totally outplayed it in the last quarter. And they won that fifth game and eventually the championship.
Yes, that would be part of the famous Willis Reed injury arc, and the storyline is well known. And Dave Stallworth. And Nate Bowman, I would imagine, played important roles in that part of the story. The rivalry with Cincinnati, it's been renewed here in recent years, but that was a big deal in the 60s. Why? Describe the rivalry with the Bearcats in those days.
Well, I can start. I mean, we had some incredible games against Cincinnati. Got to understand, Cincinnati, because you asked a previous question about, you know, why was basketball such a big deal in Wichita? A large part is because it was in the Missouri Valley Conference. And at that time, the Missouri Valley was, if not the best, certainly among the best conferences in college basketball. They were also one of the few conferences that recruited black players. And that was a major reason Wichita got Dave Stoller. Cincinnati, of course, became nationally prominent when Oscar Robertson was on the team, but they never won a national championship with the Big O. They won it after the Big O, and they won it in 1961 and 1962. They almost won it in 1963, the year that we beat them, but they lost in an overtime game, one of the most famous games against Loyola Chicago, when Jerry Harkness beat them. But the rivalry was intense. I mean, the year before the 63 game in 62, Lanny Van Emmon, who was then the guard for Wichita in his last year, beat Cincinnati on Cincinnati's court by 1 point with a last second shot. And so then Stallworth beat him again the following, you know, whatever year it was after Cincinnati had won 37 straight games. And so the rivalry was incredibly intense, but in large part because Cincinnati was so good.
Mr. Powers, as a player, what do you remember about the Bearcats and those meetings?
You know, like I told Melvin on our interview, I don't remember. And that's the truth. There's some things that are very clear in my mind, but not that.
Was there
I'm almost 80 years old, so I got a right to that.
I know. I'm pushing you to go way, way back in the memory banks. I understand that. Is there a Stallworth memory or a Stallworth anecdote or story that the two of you unearthed during the process of writing this book that really stands out as interesting or significant?
Okay, I'll throw you one. And by the way, I want to tell you how we found out a lot of information, not only from interviewing teammates, but we were greatly enabled to do the research by going to newspapers.com, which is a website that is an archive for all newspapers in the United States, going back into the 50s and 60s. And we could not have done a book because, I mean, I'm 72 and even though Bob's got 8 years on me, I couldn't remember all these games. But by going back, and we got blew by blows by going back to the newspapers. So we got a lot of stories. But one personal story I got, I hate to give away the story, but it's so darn good. There was a famous sprinter back in the 60s who played football for Arizona State named Henry Carr. Henry Carr won an Olympic medal, to give you an idea of how fast he was, in 220. Well, we talk about Dave's sports versatility. He was good in any sport that he did. But he was basically goaded into running the 220 when Henry Carr visited Wichita, when Carr was a football player at Arizona State and Wichita was still playing football. And in his tennis shoes, without any training, Dave Stallworth went down to the track, in what is now Cessna Stadium. And he ran a 22-220 in his tennis shoes with no training, at a time when the world record was in the high 20s, like 7.8. And Henry Carr was among the fastest people in the world. And that to me just, gives you the goosebumps. Stallworth was an incredible athlete.
I read that story. That did stand out to me in the book. Mr. Powers, how about you? Was there is there a Stallworth anecdote from the book that really captured your attention?
There's a Stallworth anecdote that I didn't see because it happened in the huddle, but I was sitting there. I don't remember what game it was. Dave Stallworth tells this story himself. They were 7 points down or 6 points down with, 30 seconds left on the clock. And Ralph calls timeout, and they come into the huddle, and Ralph looks at him and says, "All right, fellas, we got them right where we want them." And Dave tells that story a lot. I think he even tells it on one of the tapes that we had. But Dave would take those kinds of things to heart, and we won that game.
That was the 63 game against Cincinnati.
Was it?
Yep.
Okay. Well, he loves telling that story, and I love it.
He hit the final two free throws, and they won by 1 point. And then the fans carried him off the stadium. And I was one of those little kids on the floor in the middle of that melee when Stallworth is on somebody's shoulders. I'll never forget.
And there's one other thing that, in this interview I had with Melvin brought back a lot of memories, some of which I couldn't grab a hold of. But he talked about Melvin was telling me about when we played them in Cincinnati and the standing ovations that Stallworth would get in other arenas. And Melvin says to me, he says, "Bob, and those standing ovations were before the game started." And that's the deal. I mean, no matter where he went, he was a hero.
That is an excellent way to wrap up. Gentlemen, I appreciate your time very much. One more time, tell people how they can get the book. We are, of course, coming up on Christmas time. So if you have a Shocker fan out there that might appreciate learning the history of the program and the history of the man whose statue they pass every time they come in the arena, how can people get the Life and Times of Dave the Rave Stallworth?
Just go to Amazon.com and buy it either in Kindle or in hard copy.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your work on the book, and I appreciate your time today.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you so much, Paul.
Thank you for listening to the Roundhouse Podcast, courtesy of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. We encourage you to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can find more Roundhouse content at GoShockers.com.
Bradshaw into Wingate. Wingate's going to dribble it a couple of times and throws it in the hands of Cousinard. Threw it away. Cousinard to Ryan Martin for the dunk! The Shockers are going to the Sweet 16! It's all over. The Shockers up 7. 3 seconds. 2. Jumper by Smith is no good. Wichita State to the Sweet 16!